Welcome to Pod Summarizer, the way to summarize your favorite podcasts. Welcome to the Mel Robbins Podcast. In this episode, the discussion revolves around the essential steps to achieving success, focusing on the importance of learning, experimenting, performing, and ultimately thriving. Listeners will discover how to navigate the challenges that arise on the path to greatness and the significance of reflection in personal growth. Let's begin.
Yeah, there's five in between, but they're very simple. And if we actually follow them, we're guaranteed success. So the first is learn. The fact that people are listening to us today, the fact that people follow you, they read your books, they may listen to mine, they get the opportunity to learn. But what's the difference? We know lots of people that learn but never get to change their life. So what's going wrong? What's the missing part? After learning, we have to experiment. You've got to try this out. You may try it out tomorrow and it may not work. You may try it out on Wednesday and it will work perfectly. You may try it out in a week and then there'll be a little dip. So experiment with it. Don't feel like it's going to be perfect tomorrow. Play with it. Have fun with it. And then the third step is perform. Once you've experimented, you get into a groove. You start to feel it working. You start to notice it in your body. Your mindset feels different when you wake up in the morning. Now you don't have to do all the conscious stuff anymore. It's kind of unconscious. And then finally, there'll always be struggle. Just before you're about to unlock this new level of greatness. And then finally, there's thrive. So to me, that reflection process is those three steps in between of experimenting, performing, and struggling. It's the ability to try something out, then reflect back and go, wait, how could I have done that 1% different? How could I have done that 2% different? What do I need to shift? And as soon as you start doing that, you start enjoying reflection. So reflection's not just in the mind. It's something you're practicing. It's something you're experimenting with.
I've never heard anybody explain it that way.
I love that.
Well, it makes so much sense because you're right. Like, I think you can hear an idea and you can try it once. And then if it doesn't feel the way you want it to feel, most people stop.
Yes.
And I've never thought about the fact that if you don't actually know that trying something and then reflecting on what worked, what didn't work, tweaking it, experimenting, as you said, you're always going to stop.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And by the way, isn't it just the case, Mel, that even something that you've done for years, you still need to keep experimenting with it? So just because something worked last year doesn't mean it's going to work this year. You've got to keep that process going. And that's what makes it fun and alive. And it doesn't become routine and monotonous. And so I love reflection being in action.
You know, Jay, so many people look to you because you have written just incredible blockbuster books. You have millions and millions of followers. Your podcast is the podcast I listen to. Your podcast is the podcast that inspired me to get into the podcasting space.
Mel, you're going to make me cry.
As we delve deeper into the essence of growth and transformation, let's explore how our identities shape our actions and decisions.
It's the identity and the reputation that that identity is built.
Okay, say more about that.
Yes. Yeah, so it's saying, well, I'm a teacher. I can't be a social media creator. I'm a teacher. That's what my friends know me as. That's not what my students know me as. That's what my parents know me as. That's what my kids know me as. How can I be a teacher and be a social media creator? It's not possible. Oh, I'm a nurse. How can I be a nurse and a podcaster? That can't be the case. What do I have to offer? I'm a nurse. And by the way, that's what everyone in my social circle knows me as. So now if I record a podcast, they're going to look at me and think, wait, what does she have to say? What are you going to teach the world? Oh, I'm a mom. I can't be a mom and own a TikTok shop. I don't know how to do that. I didn't go to business school. So this is what we do. And the real reason is because our social circle has validated or at least approved that current position. Everyone in our social circle knows what that means. They recognize it and they understand it. As soon as we do something that people don't understand, we're scared that they're not going to like us. And as soon as we think they're not going to like us for doing something they don't understand, we leave behind what we love because we say, well, I can't do it if they're going to misunderstand me. I can't do it if they're going to dislike me. I have so many friends right now, Mel, honestly, that are scared to put out a video because they feel the pressure from their own friends. People are not feeling pressure from the world. People are usually not worried about the comments that will come many years into being a creator. It's the people around us that we're most worried about. And so the only way we let go of that is recognizing and building this identity and insight that I can be a teacher and a creator. I can be a nurse and a podcaster. I can be a mom and own an online business. I can be two things at once, and I don't need anyone else's permission. And by the way, when I pull it off, even then they won't understand. So it was never about them understanding. It was always about me focusing on what I love.
You know, I know that I've had like so many career changes. I sometimes feel like I'm a cover band for ABBA doing costume changes. Like it's not a resume. It's like a choose your own adventure. But you have had so many twists and turns in your career. You literally went from university to a massive like consulting job to pursuing like spiritual training as a monk to then deciding having an epiphany. And at every one of those moments, there was that pressure that you're talking about where you have to make a call that who you are and how you're living your life no longer feels right. And then you have always made the turn.
Yeah.
And so can you just like quickly kind of tell us a few of those moments so that the person listening understands that at any single moment, you are literally one decision away from turning your life in a different direction. And talk a little bit about what holds you back when that resistance shows up. Like, well, I can't leave a consulting job.
Yeah. Thank you for saying that. And the idea is everyone needs to become a professional quitter, right? It's like we need to get really good at quitting.
Now that we've explored the importance of knowing when to let go, let's shift our focus to how we can transform our work environment into a more positive and productive space.
If you're going to spend 8 to 9 hours, maybe more, at work every day, it's not great to walk in and think that for 9 hours a day, your mind is programming your thoughts to say, I hate being here. I don't want to be here. I can't wait to get out, because you've wasted 9 hours of your day that could be used in building the next thing. So the mindset shift is, I do hate being here. I'm going to accept that. I'm going to acknowledge that. I'm not going to lie to myself. But I'm going to take everything I possibly can from this opportunity, because it is a part of my story. And it is such a powerful part of my story, because this only makes the story better. I'm going to learn from a place that I hate, and I'm going to learn everything I possibly can. And so that mindset shift is, how do I turn and transform a place of misery and pain and potentially suffering into a place that becomes the launch pad of my life? And all of a sudden, now you're walking into work thinking, oh, this is a launch pad. Oh, wait a minute, this is a step. This is the place where I take off from, rather than, oh, this is a place that's keeping me in prison. And I think that's the switch that people need to make, because if you're always looking for it outside of work, you're only giving yourself 2 hours in the evening, maybe an hour if you're lucky, after you've done the chores, put the kids to bed, washed the dishes. So why not use those 8 to 9 hours to build skills, to build confidence, to build security that you have available to you?
Well, you know what else I hear? I hear trust.
Yes.
Because I think a lot of times, at least me personally, when I've felt very stuck, there was this intense feeling like I was in the wrong place, which then creates resistance. And what you just did is by saying, if I'm going to spend 8 hours here, then I'm going to get everything I can out of it, because I trust that by doing that, I'll actually find the next thing.
There's a beautiful book which talks about how really we find our purpose through sampling. And when I think of the word sampling, the way I describe it as is collecting and connecting. You are collecting stories, experiences, skills, and ideas in every job you work in. And one day, after collecting for many, many years, you will connect the dots of all of those different skills, of all of those different experiences. And that's when everything falls into place. But if you don't collect in the first place, there's nothing to connect. It's not about finding and discovering something. It's collecting along the way. You're collecting little jigsaw pieces. And then one day you spread them out and you put them down and you start putting the pieces out and they all fit. And you go, oh my gosh, I can't believe they connected. When I look back in my life and I think, I'm as much a consultant as I am a monk, as I am a media person, all of those things are really valuable parts of me. And it goes back to the point I was making earlier. I can't be a nurse and a content creator. I can't be this and that. Well, you can, because that is your superpower. Your superpower is that you did what you did in the past and what you do now.
Now that we've explored the significance of collecting experiences and skills, Let's delve into the distinction between purpose and passion and how they intertwine in our lives.
So, Jay, what is the difference between purpose and passion? And what do we get wrong about it?
Passion is what brings you life. It's what brings you joy. It's what makes you feel like you're doing something exciting and exhilarating and thrilling. So for me, it's studying and learning and synthesizing. I could spend a weekend in a cave of books and never get out and make notes and study. That's one of my greatest passions in life. Your purpose is when you use your passion in the service of others. If your passion doesn't have a service element, if you don't use it to improve people's lives, if you don't use it to inform other people, if you don't use it to make a difference in someone's life, it's not a purpose. So let me give an example. If you're a photographer and your favorite passion in the world is photography, you love finding unique locations, you love capturing human emotion, you love capturing memories for people. As soon as you start doing it for others, it's a purpose. There you have it. It's that simple. It's not like you have to go on a whole charity trail and start taking pictures and giving them out for free. When you start capturing moments and you do it with that intent, it's a service. There's a beautiful study that I love from Amy Wisniewski and her team at the Yale School of Management. So they went out in 2019 to research what they believed was the most difficult job in America. Any guesses, Mel?
Psychologically or physically?
Well, they just went out to think what was the most difficult job.
I think probably teacher.
Yeah, that was up there.
Or public servant. I don't know.
All up there. The one that they decided on was hospital cleaner. Because they believed that these people not only have to wash bed sheets, pillows, floors, toilets, plates, they have to wash up after people pass away. So it's a very heavy job. And also, you just finished cleaning a toilet. You leave and now you got to run in and clean it again. It's not as simple as, hey, we did that once and it doesn't happen anymore. So they went and interviewed these hospital cleaners and they asked them what they did. And the hospital cleaners said, we believe we're low skilled labor. In their own words, we wash toilets, plates, floors. They carried on and they found this whole group of hospital cleaners who didn't call themselves cleaners. They called themselves healers and carers.
And this brings us to a profound realization about the nature of purpose and how it can transform our understanding of our roles in the world.
That is the single best definition of purpose I've ever heard. And it's accessible. And I want to make sure that as you're listening to Jay and you're spending time together with us, that you really take away that definition. Because it's even when you're stuck or even when you've just got a lot going on, it's very easy to identify the little things in your life that energize you, whether it's books like Jay, or for me, it's, I love gardening and flowers and I love cooking. I love spending time with my family. I love making people smile. That brings me energy, right? I love being outside. I love learning. And so when you take those things that naturally bring you energy and you do a little bit more of it, it lifts you up. But then when you figure out ways to extend those things that bring you energy in service of others, now you're on the track of discovering why you're here in the first place.
Yes.
And aligning your life with purpose. And so in that beautiful example you just gave, and thinking about it, energizes people to be like part of something where you're caring for people.
Even in the hardest job in the world. Yes. That's why I use that example.
Yes.
Because those individuals may not even be passionate about cleaning, but they found a way to think about it differently. That's why it touches my heart so much, because it's in such a difficult space and environment. And to your point, Mel, what you were just saying, I was talking to one of my team about this, and she was talking to me about how her mom didn't really know what her purpose was. So I asked her, what's her passion? And she said her favorite thing is to organize family trips. And so now her mom has started organizing family trips for not only her family, but the friends of her family and couples. And so she's a retired mom at this point in her life, but she loves planning trips. She lives vicariously through all of her kids and their friends and grandkids and whoever else it is. And that's what she does now. That's a purpose. Your purpose doesn't need to be this big thing that you have to go and change a million people's lives or a billion people's lives. If you can do that, that's beautiful. But that's not what a purpose is. A purpose is not defined by scale. It's not defined by the amount of people you reach. It's not defined by doing something big. Your purpose doesn't have to be your job. It doesn't have to be something you dream of doing every day. Your purpose is simply using your passion in the service of others in the smallest of ways, in the simplest of ways. And it brings you so much joy. And by the way, it also gives you validation for something beautiful that you do. We all want validation. We all seek it. And I want to just normalize that because I think people feel bad for wanting it. Mm. But we all need to feel wanted and needed and loved. It's part of being human. But the problem is when you become someone you don't want to be or do something you don't want to do to get validation, whereas when you get validated for using your passion in the service of others, there's no greater feeling than that.
As we reflect on the importance of validation and the joy of serving others, let's shift our focus to the lessons learned from our experiences and how they shape our journey.
I was a student for 2 years. There's a reason why we came out of the gate and launched 2 episodes a week. It's because I learned from you that if you do want to have a successful show, you have to do at least that many episodes. And so the learning part and the studying others and allowing others to lead the way and to show you and to truly flip envy into learning from somebody, that is worth $100 million in your life to understand that everybody that is out in the world right now is somebody that you can learn from. It's just unbelievable. And so thank you for sharing that. And you know, there's another quote that you have that I absolutely love, Jay. We judge others by their actions, but ourselves by our intentions. What does that mean?
This is something that actually my monk teachers used to repeat to us a lot. And it's a reality check that's a bit of a punch in the gut. So we judge ourselves by our intentions and we judge other people by their actions. So if we feel our intention was good, we feel we're good people. But if someone has a bad action, we feel they're bad people. Whereas what we should be doing is allowing other people to be judged also for their intentions and their actions. So it's a plea, a proposal, a pledge to say, before you judge someone, before you put someone in a box, please learn what their intention was. Because often you'll find that their intention probably wasn't as malicious as you think. It wasn't as manipulative as you think. It wasn't as crazy as you think. It was the same as yours. They too had good intentions. They also got into it with good intentions. But we judge ourselves by our intentions, so we think we're good people. Mm. And we judge other people by their actions, and so we think they're bad people. If I made a mistake and you judge me for my action, all of a sudden you've labeled me. But my intention was so pure and so genuine. I'll give you an example of something that happened recently to me that I feel really, really applies to this. Mm-hmm. And I was doing something with a friend and we did a podcast together and I was traveling on the road or whatever and I didn't post something about it. And my friend messaged me and was just feeling really upset that I hadn't supported them, that I hadn't noticed them, that I hadn't recognized them. And now we're really good friends, so they were able to vocalize it to me.
Right.
But if we weren't, they would have immediately judged and thought that I had some ulterior motive or some agenda. And the truth is, I'm so disconnected from my social media in the sense that I don't post. I'm not there. I'm on the road. I try and stay off my phone for most of the day. And all of a sudden, I was thinking, wait a minute, if they judge me for my action, it looks like I don't care about them. It looks like I don't value them. It looks like this isn't important to me. But my intention was, I love you. You're one of my favorite people. I'm here to help you in whatever way possible. And I just think about the amount of friendships we'd save, the amount of relationships we'd save if we just learned to judge people for their intentions, not their actions.
Now, reflecting on the complexities of our emotions and perceptions, let's dive into how we can navigate these feelings in our friendships.
Do you have like a little trick? Because my like emotions and pettiness can just flood me. Like I've never had training as a monk, Jay. So I would imagine like your sort of engine doesn't rev as high as mine, but it is so easy to see friends out together and then immediately judge them for their actions, that they're excluding you, that they must be talking about you, that now they're closer than you are to them, that it means something, it means you did something. And then, of course, you respond to all of that emotion. We are so fast to assume. Mm. Is there anything that you do or that you recommend that people do?
Mel, there's this thing, I don't know if you've heard of it, it's called the let them theory. Sorry, I had to. I was waiting for you there, which is really good. There's let them and then let me in it, and it works perfectly, which I genuinely believe. It's amazing. But to answer your question, I'll be honest with you. When it's people that I know, I tell them. Hmm. I really believe it's important to tell people. I check in with them. I ask them. Because if I know you, if our relationship means I can't ask you the question, then it's a weak relationship. If I ask you the question and we have a great conversation, now our relationship is strengthened by it. We actually got closer. A hard conversation should make you closer to the person. Mm-hmm. A hard conversation should not make you further away from them.
Say that again, Jay.
If you love someone and they say they love you, a hard conversation should bring you closer together. A hard conversation should not push you away from each other. If you're scared to have a hard conversation with someone you love, that means you're not that close.
Dude, right, I think those are the hardest people to talk to, though.
Yeah, but that should be the easiest person to talk to because you should be able to have a safe space to raise it. And so if I'm close to someone, if it was me and you, I would call you up. And I actually trust we'd have a great conversation because of it. I know that. I actually believe that if we ever had anything like that, which we haven't, and I would call you. But what I find is if you can't call the person, I would just think about, this is the second part of that statement. My monk teachers would always say, instead of judging people by their actions, judge them by their intentions and judge yourself by your actions, not your intentions.
Oh,
think about all the stupid things you've said, you've done and got wrong. And all of a sudden you start to recognize, wait a minute, if someone judged me for that, I'd feel pretty bad about it. That doesn't define me. That's not who I am. And all of a sudden, when you have that reflection, it flips the entire statement. Wait a minute, that can't be who I am, and that's not who they are.
Now, as we shift our focus, let's explore how our perceptions of ourselves and others can influence our ability to cultivate gratitude, especially in challenging times.
And don't forget how you got there, because that's the hidden secret of how you get to the next place.
How do you use gratitude mm-hmm. to lift yourself up in a moment that is extraordinarily difficult? You know, you're grieving, you're in the middle of a breakup or a divorce, you've lost your job. Is there a way to use gratitude to lift yourself up when life just really has knocked you down?
When life's knocked you down, it's hard to be grateful for the good things in your life. Mm. And it's sometimes bad advice because someone's just lost a marriage,
yes,
lost a family member, yes, whatever it may be.
So there's the time for grieving, of course.
Absolutely.
And that's the mentally healthy response to have
totally.
The avalanche of emotions.
But if you're going to be grateful, you sometimes have to do a counterintuitive practice. Instead of being grateful for what you have, think about how your life would be without something. I find that to be the greatest thing for gratitude. If I try and be grateful for something that I've had for a long time, I may get bored of it. I may be familiar with it. But if I ask myself, what would my life be without that? Oh my gosh, all of a sudden, I'm so grateful. What would my life be without? Have you ever had it where you just like hurt your little finger or like get a little cut and now you can't use a finger or you can't use a thumb? And all of a sudden you're like, oh my God, I'm so grateful for my hand because what would my life be like without it? This is the way we have to trick our mind. Humans are better at noticing something when it's about to go away. We always hear the phrase, you don't know what you've got until it's gone. Mm. So we have to use that in our favor to think, not what do I have that I'm so grateful for? What could I not live without?
That is life-changing. I've never actually thought about it like that. I was sitting there the moment you said it, and I thought, how would I feel if Jay wasn't in my life? And I'm grateful for you, but the second I envisioned you, sorry, Jay, evaporating and not knowing you as a friend, it's like it 10x'd it. And even the example of, you know, you said the finger, like I was in the hotel the other night and I was walking to the bathroom, of course, as a 56-year-old woman at 3 o'clock in the morning, and I hit my toe on the bed frame. You ever done that? It feels like you've ripped it off your foot. It's amazing to me that my experience of that is, you know, screaming in agony and then thinking, how can something so little hurt so much? And your reframe is, imagine my life without my foot, and the gratitude that floods you. I mean, that's incredible, Jay.
It really works. So simple. And, you know, you can apply it to small and big things. But even I was thinking, as you were saying, friendship, I was thinking about our friend Dave Hollis.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, it's, I know you spoke at his funeral and I sadly couldn't be there, but as I'm thinking about it, I'm like, I was grateful for Dave. I actually had some really beautiful interactions with Dave.
Same.
I really did. He was a wonderful man.
As we reflect on the connections we've cherished, let's explore how we can open ourselves up to new relationships and opportunities.
But if you block it, it's like when the sun's out and you turn the blinds down. The sun is freely showering its rays onto every single home. The sun does not discriminate. The sun will freely give its sun to everyone. But if you put the shades down, you're blocking it. Don't do that.
There are so many people that feel isolated and lonely, Jay. If somebody's listening and they're like, the shades are down, Jay, and there aren't people in my life, what is one thing somebody can do that recognizes that the shades are drawn for whatever reason? How do you start to crank it back up and let all of that that is available to you, friendship, love, connection, possibility, hope, all of it? What's one thing that somebody could do?
Be that person. Be the person to text someone love. Be the person to call in and check in on someone, even if they don't check in on you. Be the person who goes and helps someone with their groceries because they need it. Be the person who goes and gives love to others, even if they're not feeling it back. Because that's the beautiful thing about love. Love is not only experienced in receiving, it's experienced in giving. That's the most phenomenal thing about love, is that when you're giving someone something special, you feel love just as much as they do. Sometimes we feel it even more than when we're receiving something. Right? There's this feeling of when you've done something for someone you love, there's a joy in it. You think about it. You said you love gardening. Gardening is the best analogy for this. There is no rose in the world that grows the day you plant the seed. There is no plant in the world that grows the day you plant the seed. It takes months, sometimes even years, for a tree to have a beautiful fruit or a beautiful flower. And it takes a particular season. Now, if you planted that seed and said, why don't I have a fruit today? It wouldn't make sense. I'd look at you like you're crazy. But that's what we do in love. We plant the seed today and we want the fruit, the flower, and the shade today. And the deepest form of love is something that Emerson said.
As we reflect on the patience required in nurturing love, let's explore how this intentionality translates into our everyday choices and actions.
And at that time, I didn't have an answer. I just did it because it looked good. It looked cool. My answer was that basic. Yeah, they look good together. The colors match. Oh, this looks cool. It looks trendy. And he'd never be satisfied with that. He'd say, why did you do it? And he kept asking me that. And in the beginning, it would annoy me. It would annoy me so much. It'd be like, God, come on, it looks good. Who cares? Just give me an A. Like, you like the look of it. He loved how it looked, but he wasn't satisfied with that. He'd say, why? I believe he's the reason I became such an intentional person. Because he didn't allow me to place one color or dot or shape next to something else if I could not explain why. So today, if you come to my home, you come to my space, everything from the moment I wake up to what I see, to which book is by my bedside, to what quote is next to my work desk. Everything is meticulously, intentionally planned out because he never allowed me space to just do something because it looked good. And that is the biggest gift he's given me because my life is so intentional. And he gave me that. He was an art teacher. I didn't know that at 11 to 18 when he was my teacher, but I look back and I know it now.
Oh my God. You're making me think of a teacher that I wish was still with us. He was my middle school and high school math teacher. I loved math. Mr. Core, Glenn Core. He was a military guy. So he had a crew cut and he always wore those like short sleeve collared shirts. And he had the protector and the glasses and the whole thing. And God, did I love math. And he would always call people up to solve problems on the chalkboard. And I can feel him like handing the chalk to me, right? And so you would like solve the chalk things and then he'd coach you through it. And then we'd talk about the problems. But he had this thing that he would do where if somebody started to struggle or get frustrated or feel really stupid, he would turn to the class and say, "What do I always say?" And we would all recite back, "Perseverance wins." And he would take his chalk and he would write in all caps, "Perseverance wins." And they would underline it. And then we'd be like, "Exclamation, exclamation." Oh, I love that. And it's true. It like seeped into my pores. And I think more than anything else that I, yes, planted seeds, but just kept going. That perseverance wins part just don't quit. Like that's part of it. It's just you're always, if you open yourself up to learning, to experimenting, to all of the abundance that is available to you out there,
yeah,
eventually it comes.
That's it for today's summary. To stay up to date with more summaries and news, follow us on X and Instagram and visit our website www.podsummarizer.xyz. If you have any comments, questions, suggestions, or complaints about the content displayed, please do not hesitate to write to us at info or podsummarizer.xyz. Thank you for listening.